Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. After last month's anniversary? No, that's not the right word. I can't get my words out and we've only just started. Last month's milestone, that's the word I'm looking for. Last month's milestone of being 24, 2 years. Now we're 25, which is, quarter-life crisis, isn't it? Quarter-life millennial crisis. So I might go have a meltdown any minute. So, yeah, you know, be gentle with me. Be gentle. Anyway, this month we have a fabulous interview with UK author Jane Retzig, and you'll hear that in a few moments' time. And I read Jane's book before I spoke to her, The Retreat, which was fabulous. Really enjoyed it. But before we get to that, we're going to see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what I've been up to over the last month or so. So first up, the Amazon charts, and lording it over everyone else at the moment in the US and top five in the UK. Big crown on her head, looking down, giving everyone else a wink, is To Have Loved and Lost by Eliza Andrews. Now, this is a romance between two characters, I think called Alex and Graham. Definitely Graham. Maybe Alexa. Graham. Both women, though, I'm reliably insured, even though one of them is called Graham. But I think that can be a woman's name in America. I think the woman in Butter My Cheerleader was called Graham, wasn't she? But I can't say for sure. Anyway, the blurb of Loved and Lost says they both got dead exes, but unlucky, and they both play basketball. And the blurb also assures you that they're going to have sex, be gritty, and have a happy ending. Good to know. It's odd that it needs to spell that out, I think, but hey, it's clearly working as it is number one, and it is, says it's on sale for 99 cents until January the 1st. So if that doesn't spur people on to buy it, I don't know what will. Also ranking high on both sides of the Atlantic is Gia Hawkins with her book Something About You. Now, this one has got a cover on it like it's from the 80s, and that's not a bad thing. No. I'm a lover of the 80s, me. It's got white flowers and two girls not looking at each other in shoulder pads. But hey, if it worked for Melanie Griffiths all those years back in Working Girl, it works for me. And yes, I'm showing my age there, clearly. Melanie Griffiths. Anyway, back to the book. It's about a woman who is due to get married, but calls off a wedding at the last minute. And then she cancels her wedding flowers and falls apart on the florist. And then promptly, you know, they fall in love. And I like this one because, I do like the cover. It's got something warming about it. And I also love that the blurb has some great flower puns in it. So it scores extra points with me because I like a nice pun in a blurb. Good sort of wordage about blooming and all that jazzle. Anyway, also doing well in the charts is perennial favourite Radcliffe with her new book, Love on Call. How many books does Radcliffe write a year? Answers on a postcard, as well as running Bold Strokes Books. The woman is, you know, incredible, and her fan base clearly cannot get enough. So hats off to her. This new one is a medical drama starring Doctors Glenn and Mariana. There's pain, there's drama, and there's blood. And we all know that when there's all those three in clear attendance, there's going to be romance. Hooray for romance. Lila Bruce has also been keeping leaping about the top of the charts. Leaping, I tell you, like an excitable puppy with her new book, Little Lies. This one's got a woman with a gun and a trout pout on the cover. And for some reason, the woman reminded me of Princess Leia. Leia, up close, she actually looks nothing like her. But, you look at the covers on really small on your phone, don't you? So it could be that, or it could be that I need new glasses. But, it's an arresting cover, whatever. Anyway, the book involves coffee shops, bank robbers, the mob and the FBI. Honestly, I got a bit breathless reading the blurb. I did. It sounds like a frantic harem-scarum caper with a romance chucked in for good measure. I've read a Lila Bruce book before, actually. I can't remember which one it was, but I think I did. And I enjoyed... No, I did. I enjoyed it. I can't remember the name of it, though. But I'm sure this one will be just as good. So it's doing very well. And finally, a couple of others who are charging up the charts full pelt. Lydia Rose with her new book, Accidental Love. And Natasha West's Joined at the Hip looks like one to look out for too. I really like the bold colours on the cover there. Really striking. So what else has been happening in the world since we last met? Well, not a lot really. I think we all have to agree. Oh no, hang on, apart from Donald Trump winning the US election. Now, if you don't live in the UK, you might have been surprised by that election result. But I live in the UK and we've already had Brexit here this year. I didn't vote for Brexit, but it still went through. And the polls all said Brexit wouldn't happen, and it did. And everything has just gone haywire ever since. And so I didn't really believe the polls for the US election, I have to say. And I had a horrible feeling he was going to get voted in, and so it came to pass. I actually had a dream the night of the election, I was asleep when it was happening, that Hillary won. And so I woke up quite sort of, oh my God, she's won. And then I looked at my phone and, oh no. Anyway, but as I learned in Brexit, the best thing you can do is just stay and fight. And as Yaz once said, stand up for your love rights. Don't be afraid, everyone. And the second best thing you can do, as well as standing up for your love rights in a Yaz kind of way, is buy more lesbian fiction and encourage lesbian fiction writers to write more, because I guarantee that'll piss off the Trump administration. Hooray for that. Anyway, in personal news, since we last spoke, I've been busy writing the final instalment of the All I Want series. And this one's going to be called All I Want Forever. And actually, just before I was recording this, my cover designer sent through the final cover, which I love. I love it. It's just, it oozes romance. And I'm thinking of changing my middle name to Romance. What do you think? Let me know. Anyway, I was hoping to get this one out in December, but honestly, I think it's going to be touch and go right now. The reason is I was going to keep this one the same length as all the last four. So All I Want for Christmas was a full-length romance novel. But the other four in the series, All I Want for Valentine's, Spring, Summer and Autumn, have all been novellas, which are about half the size of a novel. And I was going to make this one the same, but I've got too much to say, frankly, and I think it's filling up. So I think I'd rather make... I want to do... a good job on this one, because it's the final one in this series, and I've invested a lot in Tori and Holly, and I want them to have a good final send-off. So it might tip into January, but we'll see. I'll keep you updated, on my blog and Twitter and Facebook. But it's coming along well. I'm really pleased with it. So watch this space, but it will definitely be out soon. And I also wrote in October a Christmas novella called It Had to Be You. Now, I didn't write it from scratch. It was a short story I'd written in 2014, but I beefed it up, put another 10,000 words in it, so it's a novella now. And I'm giving it away during this festive period. Yes, that's right, I'm giving it away. So if you would like a copy of It Had to Be You, head on over to my website, which is www.clairelyden.co.uk. And on the front page, there is a little box. You can just fill in your email address, click Get My Book, and you'll get an email with the book in it. It's as simple as that. Awesome. So if you'd like a copy, yes, go on over to my website, download it now. I think that's about all my personal news. Enough about me. Next up, we have my interview with the fabulous Jane Retzig. Hope you enjoy. Joining me today is UK author Jane Retzig.
Jane began publishing in the early 90s with her book Boundaries, then reissued that in 2013 when the e-book revolution kicked in. She's since published a myriad of titles, including The Wrong Woman, A Question of Trust, and The Retreat. Jane was born in a thunderstorm and currently lives in Yorkshire. And I've no idea if those two things are related, Jane, but we can ask you now. So welcome, Jane.
Hi, it's good to be with you, Claire.
Yeah, really good to have you. So are those two things related? Were you born in Yorkshire as well?
I was born in Yorkshire. I was born in Staincliffe in Yorkshire, yeah.
Right, Staincliffe. I don't know where that is.
It's kind of Dewsbury way.
Oh, Dewsbury. Okay. I used to live in Murfield, so not very far, about 3 miles down the road. Past Ravensthorpe, keep going. So so what have you been up to today thus far, Jane?
I've been working today. I've just finished at 3:30 because I've got this booked in, so it's nice. I've had a bit of an early finish today.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad that I could be of help that way.
Absolutely.
And tell listeners a bit about where you're speaking from today. So what's around you? What can you see out the window?
I'm speaking from the office. I've got my back to the window, but out of the window there's a big house opposite, and trees and hills and fields and just generally sort of countryside, because the office is actually at the edge of Harrogate. So the next thing that you come to is the fairly open countryside.
Right, lovely. Yes, it's a really nice part of the world. It's quite posh Yorkshire up in Harrogate, isn't it?
A little bit.
lots of tea shops and things, and twee shops. That's my memory of Harrogate. Lots of cream teas, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We are the Yorkshire capital of the cream tea.
Okay. Yeah. And toasted tea cakes. That's one thing I really miss, because I lived up in Yorkshire and I've lived in Lancashire as well. But I've lived in the south now for at least 25 years. And one thing I really miss is toasted tea cakes. They don't do them in the south.
No, that lovely cinnamony smell that you get from them.
And they're much bigger up north as well.
Oh, yeah.
But anybody listening in America won't have any idea what we're going on about, but they're lovely bread and currant treats. But let's get back to your writing, Jane. So tell me a bit about your writing journey and how you got started.
I think, really, whenever I've had space in my life, I've pretty much always written. From probably being about seven, I used to write kind of fairly lurid thriller stories that were a kind of a combination of the Famous Five and Emma Peel from the Avengers getting strapped to various devices with circular saws coming towards her. quite a vivid imagination as a child, and my granddad used to let me stay up and watch all sorts of things that I shouldn't have, so
right.
I sometimes wonder what the teachers made of these things that I used to give to them. and then I've really just continued to write ever since. I mean, I've had periods when I haven't, I've just life's intervened and I haven't had time to write, but whenever I've had space and time, I've always written, really.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Just something that I seem to do when I get the chance to do it.
Yeah. Cool. So I read your latest book, but I think you've since published A Question of Trust. Is that right?
I did. Yes.
So yeah. So you're churning out the books this year, definitely. But I read The Retreat just before this podcast, and I really loved it. It's got a really strong style, and the story is one I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, about a woman in an unhappy marriage having an affair. Tell me a bit about why you wanted to write it, and it's a bit different in that it starts with the affair being revealed. I'm not giving away spoilers on it saying that, am I?
No, not at all. the idea for the book came to me. I actually started it not last Christmas, but the Christmas before. It was released just before last Christmas. And I was just driving along in the car, and they were playing all the sort of usual Christmassy songs, and in and amongst the Christmassy songs, they played the Alexandra Burke version of Alleluia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a song that I love. I love Leonard Cohen's music anyway, and his lyrics fascinate me, and I always have, really, ever since I was about 18. And there was just something, it was something about the kind of bleakness, actually, of the song in contrast to all the other jolly stuff that they were playing. And also, I was trying to fathom out the lyrics as I was driving, and also I was interested in the because there are references in the song to a couple of biblical stories, but there's the biblical story of David and Bathsheba, and really what happened in that story was that stop me if you already know, but what happened in that story was that King David was walking on his palace roof, and he saw a cross on one of the other roofs. He saw Bathsheba bathing, and she was actually married to one of his generals. And I was really interested in the way that story unfolded, because David fell in lust with her, really, I think, but he they had an affair and she became pregnant, and there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing about it. And in the end, David actually sent her husband into battle in a fairly suicidal way, and got him killed, and then married her. And it just set me thinking about what kind of circumstances would lead to somebody betraying a friend like that, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I think within the retreat there are quite a few different betrayals that go on, including actually the betrayal of the husband, who kind of lets his wife down, really, and that's part of what leads to the affair anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was one thing. You really made me care about all the characters, and I cared about Ed just as much as I cared about the two women having the affair.
Yeah, I felt a lot of sympathy for Ed, even though he behaved in some ways, he kind of behaved deplorably, really, in one or two of the scenes.
He did, yes.
Yeah, but I did. I personally had a lot of sympathy for him too, and so. One of my reviewers in the States actually referred to it as a love quadrangle, and I thought that was a lovely description of it. I was interested in all those. What would make you betray a friend? What would make you enter an affair like that?
Right.
And I when I started out, I just had two scenes, really. I just had that first scene where Nat and Joe realise that the affair has been discovered, and I had the later scene at the maternity hospital, and I wrote both of those shortly after Christmas, and then the story just took off, and I just filled in the gaps,
yeah,
as the story kind of unravelled for me.
Right. And the setting and the story, the setting's very British, and I loved all the backstories. And like you said, things don't work out brilliantly for all your characters. And I like the subtitle. It's a kind of, a sort of lesbian romance, right? It's all right. And your reviews all say you don't follow formulas in your books, and they're a bit more gritty and true to life. So is this something you strive for intentionally?
I don't think I particularly do. I mean, the way that my books generally emerge is that I usually do just start out with a fairly often just a snippet, like I did with the retreat. So there often is just maybe a starting scene, or even a starting paragraph, or a starting idea, and then I just sit down and start writing, and whatever emerges. So I don't really plan the books in any way. The books, they just seem to unfold.
Right.
And so I don't. Yeah, I mean, for instance, my most recent book, I think, is actually a much lighter book than, I mean, it has its gritty elements, but which is that's a question of trust, and I think it's probably the lightest book I've ever written.
Okay, so
it's just the way they unfold, really.
Right, so it goes book to book.
Yeah. I often don't know as I'm writing. I don't know whether the ending is going to be happy or sad. It just seems to be how it unfolds.
Okay. And your lead protagonist in the book, Jo, goes through a lot and ends up at a spiritual retreat run by nuns to try to figure out her issues. So why did you decide to send her there? Is religion something that's figured in your life?
Yeah, very much so. I grew up in the Methodist church, so until I was 18 I went every Sunday, really. First of all to Sunday school, and then I became a Sunday school teacher as I got older. In the Methodist church, when you get to about 18, there's a sort of question that you would become a member, and you could become a sort of almost like a fully signed up adult member. You sort of subscribe to the beliefs of the church, and I loved the chapel that I went to, and it was very much a part of my sort of life and my social life growing up. But there was some of the creeds that I couldn't entirely subscribe to. I didn't entirely believe them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I left when I was 18, and really had about 15 years where I didn't really do very much at all, and then I was kind of looking around for something that fitted what I believed more. So for the last 20 years, I've been practicing Buddhist. I am signed up to that with all of the vows that you can have, short of actually being part of a monastic community.
Okay, all right. So I always think of Buddhism as more sort of spirituality, sort of a more holistic religion. Is that right?
Yeah, it's more of a philosophy in a way.
Yeah. Cool. And the story in the retreat is as we said, is about a long-term affair that's found out. And I'm in a fair few lesbian fiction groups on Facebook, and a lot of them hate books with cheating in, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because I think cheating's part of life, and it also makes really good drama in books too. So did you have any hesitancy writing it into your story?
I didn't actually. I mean, I think probably I would have written the book anyway, and then decided whether to publish it or not. But I think my biggest worry was the more sympathetic approach that I had to Ed, really, in terms of bringing it out into a lesbian audience. It didn't cross my mind at that point to think that people might object to the affair, because in some ways I kind of think it was fairly understandable.
So that
wasn't my main worry about releasing that particular mark.
No, you're right, actually. I can completely understand why that would have been more of a worry. Have you had people come back to you about either of those things, like the cheating or your sympathy with Ed?
Not at all. In fact, people have actually commented that they felt that book was particularly true to life, and a few people have commented to me that they were glad that Ed wasn't like a pantomime villain, that he was a rounder character, that it was possible to have some sympathy with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would agree totally with that. Oh, that's good, because it always perplexes me when I see the whole, oh, I don't read books with cheating. I just think, why not? It's just, you know, it's not that I'm pro-cheating. It's just, you know, it's life, isn't it? People do. There you go. You describe your books as lesbian romantic fiction, but you've written more mysteries and supernatural romance than full-on romance, including The Wrong Woman and The Photographed. Can we expect a full-on barnstorming romance in your future? I know you've said that A Question of Trust is a bit lighter. Is that sort of more romantic, or?
Well, it it's a mystery romance, so there's a mystery in there as well. But I think it's ironically, I think the romance that's woven into the mystery is probably the nearest I've ever done to a fairly standard romance.
Right.
I mean, I've kind of happily been sort of describing my books as romantic lesbian romantic fiction for years before I realised that actually it doesn't really fit the standard definition of romantic fiction.
Yeah.
I sort of assumed if there was a love story in there, then it was romantic fiction.
Yeah. No, I think I've fallen foul of that rule as well with my second book, because that not everybody ends up happy at the end of that one.
Oh, it's strange, isn't it? I mean, it did come as a bit of a shock to me. I mean, I got on The Wrong Woman, which I thought was quite an intensely romantic book in many ways, and I got a one-star review in America that was just headed not romantic, and I thought, well, how's that not romantic? Anyway, I think people have different definitions. And so Boundaries, which was my first novel, was just a pure straight out love story. It was, so I guess I think people have discounted it as a romance because it's got some quite dark edges to it, but it was purely a love story.
Okay.
And the Retreat really is purely a love story as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm sure I will at some point write other books that are purely love stories
with a big love heart on the front. That's what we're expecting from you now, Jane.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your first book, Boundaries, which was published in the 90s by a small press, Dimmesdale, I think it is. And you've said before that it was done on a shoestring, and you carted boxes of books around London yourself to save on production costs. So I'm really interested to hear more about publishing in the 90s, pre-Kindle. Tell me a bit about that.
Oh, yeah. Dimmesdale was really I think probably in retrospect and quite sadly a bit of an over-adventurous attempt to do a sort of mini version of Nyard Press, but in the UK, because at that point we had two really excellent feminist presses. We had the Women's Press and we had Virago, mm-hmm. but they were very much more to the literary end of the scale. And even when they were publishing things like romances and thrillers or mystery books, they were fairly literary and fairly experimental writing. So I and my friends generally we were pretty dependent on the Nyad imports from that came to Silver Moon and Gay's the Word in London,
mm-hmm.
We pretty much read everything that was on the shelves there. And my understanding of Dimmesdale was that they were hoping to be able to do a sort of homegrown UK version of that, obviously on a much smaller scale. But the big problem was that printing was very expensive because short-run print runs were very, very expensive proportionately. Postage and packaging, well, certainly postage, was very expensive. So I was living in London at the time, and the two main outlets really for Dimmesdale were Gay's the Word and Silver Moon. And so I used to deliver most of the books to both of those bookshops. And I had a particularly funny incident running up to Christmas one year, where I used to do it all on the tube as well, or on the buses and the tubes, and I'd got this massive, heavy box of books just in a box, which I was carrying, and another massive, heavy box of books on my back in a rucksack, and I'd kind of sidled onto the tube, and which was packed because it was running up to Christmas, and managed to get a seat. And then all of these people piled in round me and in front of me. I got to Leicester Square and I'd got this delivery to make Silver Moon, and I couldn't actually get out of my seat because I was pinioned in the seat by the weight of the books. So I completely missed my stop before I could manage to struggle out of this seat. I had to get off and get another tube in the other direction.
Oh, no. Oh dear. Were people smoking on the tube back then as well? I thought.
I'm just thinking actually.
completely off topic, but yeah, I just had an image of you pinned down to the seat and in a fog of smoke.
I can't remember. I can't remember when the King's Cross fire was, and I think they banned it after the King's Cross fire.
I can't remember
where that fitted in terms of the chronology. Yeah. I think they may have already stopped by then, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
And that takes me back as well, because Silver Moon, when I first moved to London, Silver Moon was still here. And I used to go and peruse the shelves. For those who don't know, Silver Moon was a great feminist bookshop in London.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. So... And so how you just did the one book with Dimmesdale?
I released two books with Dimmesdale. I released Boundaries and I released what was then called The Legacy, which it was like a novella. It was a very short book, and I was never entirely happy with The Legacy. I didn't feel that I'd develop the characters enough or really develop the story enough. So when I did start publishing again, kind of under my own steam, I actually revamped The Legacy. So that The Legacy, which was the second book with Dimmesdale that I did, was the basis for what was now published as The Full Legacy, which I think is a much better book.
Right.
But there were other authors as well publishing with Dimmesdale. So there was Christina Smythe and Jane Fletcher, and Jane's still, I think she's with, I've forgotten which company she's with. But she writes fantasy, lesbian fantasy books.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, when we were all kind of, when all of our books were going out, there were a lot of books going out to those bookshops.
Yeah. And there were lots of lesbians running around on the tube with massive boxes of books. I was going to say, I still hand deliver my books to Gaze the Word. So I know your pain. I've been on the tube with a rucksack of 20 books delivering it to Gaze the Word. You probably had slightly more than that, but
well, yeah, with three of us, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I can picture that.
So, and in 2013, you decided to take advantage of the Kindle revolution and publish yourself. So how have you found? Going indie.
I've really enjoyed it. I suppose I was doing a fairly narcissistic thing, really, which is that I had a gap at work, and I just sort of idly was browsing through Amazon, and I thought, oh, I think I'll look up and see if my books are still on there.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like a second hand, obviously.
Yeah.
And I discovered that Boundaries had actually managed to acquire a couple of really good reviews. So I thought, perhaps it might be worth, trying to self-publish it and see what happens. So that's where it started off. And I enjoy the self-publishing. I quite like the immediacy of it. I quite like having, I'm a bit of a control freak, so I quite like the having full control over pretty much the whole of the process.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. I mean, I'm always quite grateful to Amazon that I'm able to get my books out across the world. It feels a bit like a dream to me, really.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, totally. I totally agree. It is, no matter what some people do say, I think it is a great time to be a writer at the moment, because look at all the tools you've got at your disposal.
Absolutely. Yeah. So much easier.
Yeah, absolutely.
And being a writer with the internet is so much easier. I mean, I can remember in the first time round, you know, I'd have to schlep along. I was living in London, as I've mentioned at the time, so I'd have to schlep along to Wood Green Library to look things up, and it'd take all day to look something up, and I'd have to look things up on the little microfiche systems that they had, and all sorts of things. And now you can just... I just keep my Kindle Fire next to me and I just look things up as I'm writing. It's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely, totally. You forget things like that, don't you? Because I remember having to do that as well. You know, I remember having to do that at university with essays. I had to go to the library. Yeah. Imagine. Can you describe to me your writing process these days? Do you write every day? Do you write as best at a certain time? Have you got a certain place you write?
I mainly write now. I've got a little kind of room in the house that I share with my partner, actually, that we both use as a bit of a study/stroke office, and I've got my laptop there. And mainly now I write directly onto the laptop, and just whenever I can. So if I have gaps between appointments, I'll write. Some days I just don't have the time. Whenever I do have an odd hour or two, I will sit down and just work on whatever book I'm doing at the time.
Right.
I used to write longhand. I wrote Boundaries longhand in notebooks on the tube, really.
Right.
And then I used to type it up, but I write mainly on the laptop now and just carry notebooks around in case I get an idea from the laptop.
Yeah, cool. And have you always got a book on the go? You're never running out of ideas?
Well, I keep thinking that I might run out of ideas. I seem to, over the last few years, I seem to whenever I've finished a book, something else seems to pop into my mind, but I guess at some point I might have a gap or that might stop, but certainly over the last few years, since I started again, I've pretty much always had something on the go with maybe a week or two in between.
Yeah. Cool. And do you have any mantras in your writing process? Do you have anything on your wall to inspire you?
No, I don't. Not at all.
No? You just like get your bum in the chair and do it.
Yeah, I think the story is usually kind of pulling me back, you know, because the story kind of seems to reveal itself generally as I write one bit, then the next bit comes. So I'm usually quite keen to get back and write that.
Right. And I notice as well you've got five of your books in audio, which is definitely a growing market, and I haven't made the leap yet to do that. How did you do that? Is it something you do yourself, or do you do it with a company or through ACX?
I do it through ACX. If I'd been in America, I would have gone with Dog Ear Audio and Karen Wolfer, who I think was a real trailblazer for lesbian audio books. But because I need English narrators, I do that through ACX.
Right. Okay. And do you do a revenue share with them, or do you just pay them up front?
I pay them up front.
Right. Okay.
I kind of felt like that was the fairest thing to do from the start, because I wasn't sure how many audio. I mean, actually, I do sell a lot of audio copies, but I wasn't sure that I would, and I didn't. I mean, apparently it takes about 8 hours work for each 1 hour of finished audio. So I didn't like the idea of someone basically spending a full week recording one of my novels and then possibly them not really seeing very much payment for that.
Yeah.
So I always pay my narrators up front.
Okay. Well, I'm glad, and that's very encouraging that it's doing well for you as well. And I agree with Karen Wolf thing, because she's just, I know she's just recording my favourite lesfic book ever, and playing the role of herself by K.E. Lane. So I'm looking forward to that coming out in audio.
Oh, yeah, she's, I don't know if you, I'm not sure if you remember of the lesbian audiobooks group on Facebook, but she's drip feeding it to us.
Oh, I'm not a member of that, but I think I'm a member. It's the Lesbian Review Book Club, and she's been nipping in and out of there, sort of drip feeding chapters there as well. Yeah, she's a right tease, that Karen. So you're in some Facebook groups then, clearly, as well. So are you an avid reader of lesfic as well as writer of it?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, at the moment, I will often get most of my lesfic fix through audiobook, because that's often, especially when I'm writing, it often is the time when I can actually get a chance to listen to something when I'm driving or
do
sort of housework or stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I've always loved lesbian fiction, and it's a wonderful time to love lesbian fiction, because there's just such high quality stuff around.
Yeah, no, absolutely, totally agree with that. And is there a piece of writing advice you've been given that that you value the most?
Yeah, years ago, when I was in my early 20s, I read a book on how to write a novel, and I think it was a man actually who wrote that. He said, if you want to be a writer, don't work for your day job in a job where you have to do writing. And I know a lot of people do, but I've found that really good advice, because I find that if ever my work does entail having to do a lot of writing, that I just don't really want to write in my spare time or work on fiction. So I was really glad of that advice, because I think it might be quite tempting to go into a job that involves writing, and I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah, personally. Yeah, no, that is very good advice, actually, speaking as someone who's a journalist for 20 years and didn't write a book in that time.
No, it's almost like it takes up that part of your fire, isn't it, that part of your energy.
It is, yeah. I think there's only so much creative juice you've got in one day, isn't it? And yeah, if you're doing something too closely related, it's very hard to come home at the end of the day and then think, right, let's do some writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's next for you?
I'm working on the book that's just come out is a follow-up to The Wrong Woman. So there's the wrong woman, and then there's A Question of Trust, and the book that I've now just started on is a follow up. It's the next in that series.
Okay. And have you got a title for that one yet, or not yet?
It's called A Betrayal.
A Betrayal.
And it's about the theft of a Claire Colliner Art Deco figurine.
Okay.
About 10% of it.
Okay. I'm not seeing that one as the barnstorming romance there called A Betrayal.
Yeah. No, actually, it's yes, I'm not quite sure where the romantic interest will be in that.
and do you have like a date that you think that might come out?
Idea really. On average, I seem to take about a year per book. It seems to be about the sort of when I wrote the photograph. I actually wrote the photograph in 5 months, but in general, they seem to take about 8 to 9 months.
Right. Okay. So A Betrayal next year, 2017. Watch this space. And final question for you: if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Well, I'd like them to get along quite well if I was going to be their love child. So I think I'd go for Patti Smith and Emily Bronte, because I think they've got I think they've got a lot of courage and a lot of passion, and I think that they would produce quite an interesting child, and I think that child would have a lot of talent if it were to inherit their talent.
I agree. Yes, that's a very unusual pairing, but I like it. I think it would be quite a combustive pairing, wouldn't it?
I think it would.
Well, this has been fantastic, Jane. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on, and good luck with the next book.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been lovely to do it, and lovely to meet you.
Cheers.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, the All I Want series, the London series, Nothing to Lose, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, or any of the other digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, so come on down and follow me there. Also on Facebook, claire.lydon, and I'm on Instagram at clairefic. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And make sure you tune in to The Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip. Join me next time for more Hot Book Club action, where I'll be interviewing the fabulous A.L. Brooks. See you then.